You're listening to Marketplace Weekend from APM. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. We've talked this hour about the price of oil, the lives changed by it economically. There are, of course, environmental costs, not just a warming climate, but what happens when something goes terribly wrong? Just listen to this TV reporter.
Up to 40 million gallons of oil have gushed into the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh yeah, that TV reporter? That's me. 5 years ago, on the beach in Grand Isle, Louisiana, during the BP oil spill. The Coast Guard flew me up and over the site of the spill, and it was pretty staggering. You can hear us on the plane's headsets.
There's a little bit here of a line. We're overflying right now. That's oil.
Oh, yeah, right there.
The ribbons of oil were orange in some places, rainbow in others, and they stretched for miles and miles. That spill lasted 87 days. More than 3 million barrels of oil were spilled. And that eclipsed what had been the biggest U.S. spill before that, the Exxon Valdez in Prince William Sound. Former Alaskan fisherman Joe Banta remembers that moment in 1989.
When the spill happened, I was waking up listening to NPR. Over the radio, I heard that they'd run the tanker aground. And I swore and said that the captain must have been drunk. I worked for a small fishermen's association back then and went into work and started gathering information and pretty quickly realized the magnitude of what was going on by calling my friends in Cordova where I grew up.
Banta says the fishing stock has rebounded since then, but it took years to recover from the 257,000-barrel spill. And then there are the less publicized stories, like those from the Enbridge spill in Michigan, where a pipeline leak spilled onto Frank Zinn's family farm in 2010.
So all 850,000 gallons of crude oil that spilled got out of ground zero, actually flowed through our property. I think we all need to recognize that we need the safety infrastructure in place to make sure these spills don't happen.
You just heard Frank Zinn talk about a pipeline spill on his family farm. Pipelines carrying oil and natural gas crisscross the U.S. There are more than 190,000 miles of them, according to the American Petroleum Institute. And since the fight over the Keystone XL pipeline, they are increasingly controversial. To talk pipelines, we've got Matt Daly. He works at Politico Pro, where he's the energy and transportation editor and joins us from their newsroom. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I think most of our listeners are pretty familiar by now with the Keystone Pipeline fight. What other pipelines, though, are out there and being debated right now?
Well, there's a lot of them, actually. Probably one that people in the Northeast are most familiar with might be the Northeast Energy Direct Pipeline. That's one that would take gas from the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania up to the Boston area. Another one down here near Washington that's got some attention is the Dominion Atlantic Coast Pipeline. That's one that would take natural gas from West Virginia, the same Marcellus Shale formation, down into North Carolina, across Virginia. There's a lot of other smaller pipelines that are also getting a lot of attention in the local press. I live in New Jersey that's got a couple that have triggered some fights, but pretty much every pipeline around the country right now that's under construction is getting some attention from the local community.
You guys have done some reporting on sort of the Keystone effect on environmentalists, activists, and people who live in various communities. You know, is there a playbook that they have followed watching the opposition to Keystone, do you think?
Yeah, there seem to be some more and more groups that are getting involved in this. It used to be just really a local NIMBY issue. If a big company came along and wanted to dig up your property, that sort of got the attention of the local groups, but the local landowners. But now what you're seeing is environmental groups, climate change activists, all these people are looking at the infrastructure build-out, and they're saying, you know, we can help push back on this. We can lobby, we can use some of the legal strategies that we've used in other places, and we can sort of build a grassroots movement and challenge this at various levels.
You know, one of the ironies of this, I mean, you cover transportation as well. Do you think there's a case to be made that these oil companies, if they can't move crude or natural gas via pipeline, that they're just going to put it on trucks and transport it? I mean, is it going to move one way or the other?
Well, that's what the industry says, and the economics seem to have justified that so far. I mean, when the price of oil is high, there's a lot of the stuff that's moving on trucks, that's moving on trains, moving all around the country in places where it hadn't really gone before. that sort of, you know, raises some eyebrows, but it shows that the markets can be very efficient. They'll find a way to get the product to market when they need to.
Yeah, when you look going forward, what do you think the future of pipelines is going to be?
Well, it's you know, it's sort of a, it's a subsection of the country's infrastructure problem in general. You know, we need highways to get around. We need railroads to help ship products around. And oil and gas pipelines are really a part of what's been a crucial part of what's been the boom in energy production in this country. 10 years ago, there were a lot of questions around whether or not the U.S. had enough natural gas to keep meeting the demand that was there at the time. Well, now that situation has completely changed. To get that gas from the places where it sits underground, it's going to require a huge investment, billions, tens of billions of dollars, perhaps hundreds of billions of dollars in pipelines. The same with the oil that's coming out of North Dakota now, or that's coming out of Western Canada. If that energy is going to reach market, it's going to need a highway system of pipelines that can transport it around the country.
One of the things I found very interesting in your reporting is that the opposition, certainly, and the local groups opposed to some of these pipelines does not seem to break along traditional political lines. You certainly have members of the GOP and former Bush administration official working against, say, some of the pipelines in the Northeast.
Each pipeline is kind of its own story, but and the one in the Dominion pipeline running along the Atlantic coast is particular, runs through some very Republican areas of the state, and you know, that's pretty much a NIMBY issue right there. They're looking at what's a very treasured local landscape, and to have a big company come in and tear that up to put a pipeline down makes people nervous. That's really the sort of the age-old NIMBY issue. We know we need this stuff, but we don't want it in our backyard. For other people, the issue can become, you know, it can be a bigger issue. It can be an anti-fracking sentiment, or it can be a climate change, anti-fossil fuel type of a sentiment. Whatever it is, you know, all these forces seem to be combined into one these days, and it's making it very difficult to get new pipelines built.
Matt Daly, Energy and Transportation Editor at Politico Pro. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.